So the face of the U.S. to the world changes soon, from Rex Tillerson as Secretary of State to possibly President Trump's nominee, CIA Director Mike Pompeo, who will likely continue Trump's America First pledge. Then there's Italy, which just held an election in which nationalists made strides. Britain voted to exit from the EU. What does this wave of isolationism, this withdrawal, mean for global health? The Trump administration has proposed eliminating $2 billion of global health funding, which would affect HIV and tuberculosis treatment, reproductive health, maternal mortality. Lori Garrett, a former senior fellow for global health on the Council on Foreign Relations, says the line from politics to policy to public health is clear. Lori, welcome back.
Thank you.
Well, we'll talk a little bit about the opposite. What has globalization done for public health?
From the very beginning, global health and, to a lesser degree, development hitched their wagons to globalization. And you saw a lot of the most important trends in global health, particularly this huge surge in financial support tied to the kind of globalization institutions like the World Economic Forum, the G7, the G20, all the big, multinational efforts, and tied to bringing the Fortune 500 corporations on board. So from the very beginning, global health benefited from the expansion of globalization writ large.
Was that because once countries are more involved in investing in other countries or have more trade with other countries or more businesses are involved with other countries, they're more concerned or even aware of the global health issues?
That's a small part of it, that the private sector became more aligned with the effort. But the real big change, the huge shift was that globalization brought a lot of movement of resources and money around the world just because trade changed. You know, borders opened, trade restrictions, tariffs, all of that came down. And as a result, there was a sense of the flow of capital and a certain kind of obligation that went with that flow of capital, meaning that, as President George Bush famously put it when he announced the creation of PEPFAR, the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, the world's largest single disease focused global health effort in history. When he announced that, he said, he referred to the Bible and said, "Those to whom much is given, much is expected."
Well, now you say, and we can see, trends of isolationism, nationalism here in the U.S., the Trump administration cutting back monies spent on global health. Give us some examples of how you see that playing out.
Oh, there's so many things going on that are disturbing at the moment, and it's not just the United States. If it was, you know, that would be hard enough. But in fact, we see a reversal trend from many parts of the world. First of all, you have to understand the degree to which this whole exercise of what we call global health had become dependent on American money from two key sources, the U.S. government and Bill and Melinda Gates. If you add in DFID, which is the British foreign aid program, then those are the big three responsible for more than 60% of what we call global health money, going to a variety of different programs from the World Health Organization to specific HIV programs and so on. And, you know, that meant that the whole world had suddenly become incredibly dependent on just three sources of money. And I had been warning for a very long time that this was incredibly dangerous and that there might be a political moment when the United States government would shift or the British government would shift, or Bill Gates would wake up one morning and say, "You know what? I'm fed up with global health. I'm moving on to climate change." Well, that moment has now come. We're now facing shifting tides politically in those funding spaces.
Well, what do you see? Be specific. What do you see as the main health threats?
Well, I think the most serious concern at the moment is about HIV/AIDS, because what happened starting once PEPFAR rolled out in 2003, so in the last 15 years, has been a recognition that if you can get a person appropriately treated on medication, that keeps their amount of virus in their body down low, they're very unlikely to transmit virus to their sexual or drug use partners. So by treating the global population of HIV-positive people, we lower the possibility of the spread of the disease largely. And so the mission of this global exercise has been to get the entire HIV-positive population, no matter how remote, no matter how poor, into lifelong therapy to control their viral load and limit their possibility of being contagious to their partners. Add to it, the clock is ticking loudly because more and more of the new HIV infections out there involve drug-resistant strains that cannot be treated with the cheap first-line medicines. And now we're up to 10% of all new infections in the world are drug-resistant. So our window for accomplishing this control of the global pandemic is narrowing. Well, unfortunately, we've only managed to get about half of the global population on these drugs. We still have another 19 million people to reach and treat. And at that moment, when we're at that juncture, we see a sudden decline in commitments and investments. And if the Trump proposed budget for FY 2019 is actually enacted by Congress, we would see a dramatic reduction in U.S. commitment to all aspects of both domestic and foreign HIV surveillance, testing, and treatment.
Well, so what would you like to see to offset that isolationist thinking? And do you worry that it might take some kind of outbreak to convince people that nations should cooperate?
If we wait for an outbreak to take action, we'll be in the same lousy shape we were in 2014 when Ebola broke out in three countries at once. And thousands of people needlessly perished, and the whole global economy was disrupted. No, we can't continue to have a situation where urgency in global health only arises when we're in the midst of a terrible epidemic. But by the way, Robin, we're in a lot of epidemics right now. They may not be headlines in the consciousness of the average American or the average listener to this show, but we're out of yellow fever vaccine pretty much everywhere in the world, including in the United States, because there have been so many outbreaks of yellow fever and now a big crisis of yellow fever in Brazil. We have a real crisis with cholera, more than 1 million cases already in Yemen and spreading all across the African continent right now. And then, of course, we're coming out of, fortunately, the back end now, I think, finally, of a very big flu epidemic that spread and caused record levels of infection and hospitalization in many countries and in many parts of the United States. So, you know, what is it we're waiting for? How big does this next pandemic have to be? How lethal? How many millions of people and billions of dollars before we see the kind of action that is lasting and that creates some coherence across nations and shakes people out of this isolationism?
That's Lori Garrett, the former senior fellow for global health on the Council on Foreign Relations, who has frequently sounded the alarm on global health issues. And this time it's how she sees the rise of nationalism affecting global health. Lori, thanks as always.
Thank you.
And by the way, Lori mentioned Bill Gates might wake up one day and decide he's moved on from global health to climate change. Well, that has not happened. Gates is still funding health initiatives worldwide, despite feeling disappointed by President Trump's proposed cuts. And this note, federal investigators are looking into Sunday's helicopter crash into New York's East River, which is drawing attention to a popular trend in this age of Instagram. The passengers were all harnessed to the floor to take pictures while hanging out the doorless chopper. Reportedly, they'd watched a short video. They had a knife to cut the harnesses, but there are questions as to whether that is enough training. All five passengers died. All were under 35.